It's an irregular verse, so I'll just read it. Tasminu hava upasama shila paramashaya sakala jiva nikayava saya bhagavato vasudevasya bhitanam sharana bhutasya shrimach charana vinda virata smarana vigalata paramabhakti yoganu bhavena paribhavittantur Hridaya digate bhagavati sarve shambhutanam atma bhute pratyag atma yevatmanas tadatmyam avisheshena samiyu
tasmin
in that paramahansa ashram that's a mistake. Okay,
tasmin
in that paramahansa ashram.
Ooh,
certainly.
Ha,
so celebrated.
Va,
indeed.
Upasamashilaha,
in the renounced order of life.
Paramarishaya,
the great sages. Sakala, all
jiva
of living entities,
nikaya
in total,
avasasya
the residence,
bhagavataha
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
vasudevasya
Lord Vasudev.
Bhitanam,
of those afraid of material existence.
Sharanabhutasya,
the one who is the only shelter.
Shrimat,
of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Charana
Aravinda, the lotus feet.
Avirata,
constantly.
Smarana,
remembering.
Avigalita,
completely uncontaminated.
Parama,
supreme.
Bhakti
yoga, of mystic devotional service.
Anubhavena,
by the prowess,
paribhavita,
purified,
antaha,
within,
haridaya,
the heart,
adigate,
perceived,
bhagavati,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
sarvesham,
of all,
putanam,
living entities,
atmabhute,
situated within the body,
pratyak,
directly,
atmani,
with the Supreme Supersoul,
eva,
certainly,
atmanaha,
of the self,
tadatmyam,
qualitative equality.
Avisheshena,
without difference.
Samiyu,
realized. Translation. Devotional service shouldn't just be mechanical. But it's a start. Translation. Thus situated in the renounced order from the beginning of their lives, all three of them completely controlled the activities of their sense of their senses and thus became great saints. They concentrated their minds always upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the resting place of the totality of living entities, and who is therefore celebrated as Vasudev. Lord Vasudev is the only shelter of those who are actually afraid of material existence. By constantly thinking of his lotus feet, these three sons of Maharaj Priyabrata became advanced in pure devotional service. By the prowess of their devotional service, they could directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul, and realize that there was qualitatively no difference between themselves and him. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The Paramahamsa stage is the topmost position in renounced life. In sannyas, the renounced order, there are four stages: Kuchichak, Bahudak, Pavirajakacharya, and Paramahamsa. According to the Vedic system, when one accepts the renounced order, he stays outside his village in a cottage, and his necessities, especially his food, are supplied from home. This is called the Kutichak stage. When a sannyasi advances further, he no longer accepts anything from home. Instead, he collects his necessities, especially his food, from many places. This system is called Madhukari, which literally means the profession of the bumblebee. As bumblebees collect honey from many flowers, a little from each, so a sannyasi should beg from door to door, but not accept very much food from any house. Sorry, from any particular house. I guess that is because if one particular house gives him a large plate of halva, he might become a little attached to that particular house, providing he likes halva, of course. This is called the Bahudak stage. When a sannyasi is still more experienced, he travels all over the world to preach the glories of Lord Vasudev. He is then known as Parivrajakacharya. The sannyasi reaches the Paramahamsa stage when he finishes his preaching work and sits down in one place, strictly for the sake of advancing in spiritual life. An actual Paramahamsa is one who completely controls his senses and engages in the unalloyed service of the Lord. Therefore, all three of the sons of Priyavrata, namely Kavi, Mahavira, and Savana, were situated in the Paramahamsa stage from the very beginning. Their senses could not disturb them, for their senses were completely engaged in serving the Lord. Therefore, the three brothers are described in this verse as Upasama Shilaha. Upasama means completely subdued. Because they completely subdued their senses, they are understood to have been great sages and saints. It's a long purport, so please bear with me. After subduing their senses, the three brothers concentrated their minds on the lotus feet of Vasudev, Lord Krishna. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, verse 19, Vasudevaksavamiti, the lotus feet of Vasudev are everything. Lord Vasudev is the reservoir of all living entities. When this cosmic manifestation is dissolved, all living entities enter into the supreme body of the Lord Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, who merges with the body of Mahavishnu. Both of these Vishnu tattvas are Vasudeva tattvas, and therefore the great sages Kavi, Mahavira, and Shravana concentrated always upon the lotus feet of Lord Vasudev. Of Lord Vasudev Krishna. In this way, they could understand that the supersoul within the heart is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they could recognize their identity with Him. This complete description, the complete description of this realization, I'll read that again. The complete description of this realization is that simply by discharging the unalloyed form of devotional service, one can realize the self completely. Is that okay, volume-wise?
Yes.
Okay. The Parama Bhakti Yoga mentioned in this verse means that the living entity, by dint of unalloyed devotional service, has no other interest than the service of the Lord as described in the Bhagavad Gita Vasudevaksavamiti. By Parama Bhakti Yoga, by elevating oneself to the highest platform of loving service, one can automatically be relieved from the bodily concept of life and see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. As confirmed in the Brahma Samhita, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Valochanena Sandaksa Daiva Ridiyeshu Velokayanti Yang Shama Sundara Machincha Gunasarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. An advanced devotee who is known as a sat or saint can always see within his heart the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. Krishna Shyamasundara expands himself by his plenary portion, and thus a devotee can always see him within his heart. Translation again. Thus situated in the renounced order from the beginning of their lives, all three of them completely controlled the activities of their senses and thus became great saints. They concentrated their minds always upon the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the resting place of the totality of living entities and who is therefore celebrated as Vasudev. Lord Vasudev is the only shelter of those who are actually afraid of material existence. By constantly thinking of his lotus feet, these three sons of Maharaj Priyavrata became advanced in pure devotional service. By the prowess of their devotional service, they could directly perceive the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart as the Supersoul, and realize that there was qualitatively no difference between themselves and him. Omagyana Timarandasya Janandana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militang Dena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpaturubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Maha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasti Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. What's the theme of this verse and purport? It's a little more difficult, isn't it, when it's a long purport to choose the theme. I'm going to speak on the relationship between bhakti yoga or devotion and discrimination, particularly in terms of any causal relationships between discrimination and devotion, and possibly look at some of the various understandings of that relationship and some possible misunderstandings. Bhakti is often associated with the heart, the emotions and the feelings, and discrimination is cognitive, associated with the intelligence and our perceptive abilities or capabilities. Interesting. Four stages of sannyas. It's a rather sophisticated system, this Varnashram. It's not that there are just four ashrams and four varnas, but there are subdivisions within each. Here, there are four divisions described within the sannyas ashram. Kuti Chak, Bahudak, Puviraja Kacharya, and Paramahansa. Even within the within the Varnas, there are varieties. It's not that they were just all Brahmins were the same, or Kshatriyas were the same, and so on. There's variety. Mm-hmm. Even if a person is, say, a great musician, they may become a Brahmin. Generally, the musicians were counted amongst the Shudras, but if they were a maestro, became a teacher of music, they would, could also be counted amongst the Brahmin class. Dronacharya was a Brahmin, but he taught military art, a different type, and there was some debate as to his role. He was criticized, "You're a Brahmin, but you're slaughtering all these soldiers. This is not consistent with your varna." So it was rather nuanced. Mm-hmm. And of course, the ability to think and organize in a nuanced way. You know the word nuance? It means fine detail, detailed way. It's to do with discrimination. That's discrimination. So the topmost stage is Paramahansa. Paramahansa is compared to a swan. Not only is the swan a graceful and beautiful animal, and Srila Prabhupada mentions it tends to reside in scenic places, but it has the ability to, when it's given a mixture of milk and water, to take the milk and leave the water. The opposite is the pig. Why is the opposite the pig? Because it has no discrimination in eating, sex, and other activities. It eats anything. And of course, when it comes to sex, no consideration. Is this my mother or my daughter? No, there's no such. A human being has that discrimination. Yesterday, Radhika Raman's mother explained how a brahmachari sees everyone as mother. Tries to see with that vision. But animals are incestuous. And therefore there are certain... It's interesting, the Vedic tradition, there's great discernment how we deal with different people in society, even the terms we use to address them. Nowadays, I've heard that some sons and daughters address their parents by their first name. Personally, I find that rather strange, to address your mother by your first name. It's not really appropriate. So there's this is culture. Even one's own wife should be addressed as, usually Devi is. I know sometimes I've personally been criticized for using that term as if it's somehow archaic or too religious or something, I don't know. But actually it's an important aspect of the relationship between husband and wife. That is culture. Culture means discrimination, the ability to deal with people appropriately. The other animal is the crow, and this is particularly mentioned in connection with our reading matter. Tadvag vishago janataga viplavo yajmin pratishlokam abadhavatyapi namanyan tasya kinton kintani yach shrinvanti gayanti krenanti sadhava. Very nice verse, very relevant to Srila Prabhupada's mission. What's the translation? On the other hand, actually, the Bhagavatam is describing the crows as going towards a rubbish literature. You'll see crows. They may go to litter bins, garbage bins, and they're happily eating there. That's their tendency. So similarly, this literature, other literature, mundane literature, is compared to rubbish. We'll come back to that. But on the other hand, that literature which is full with descriptions of the transcendental glories of the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the unlimited Supreme Lord is a transcendental creation meant to bring about a revolution in the impious life of a misguided civilization. Such transcendental literature, even though irregularly composed, is heard, sung, and accepted by purified men who are thoroughly honest. The other literature, it often glorifies others, mundane people. However, we may notice that more often than not, it criticizes. It has that mood of criticism. Usually based on some bodily designation. One shouldn't take that criticism too seriously of those with mundane vision. There is a story in the Panchatantra about one gentleman who was taking his horse to market. So he rode on the horse, and his son was walking beside him. And he went through one village, and a crowd of people gathered, and they began to criticize him. Look at this, child abuse. There he is, a healthy, stout man, riding on the horse, and he's forcing his young child to walk beside him. Criticism. They were talking like this. So he overheard this. So he thought, okay, some humility. He got off the horse, put the child on the horse, and started continued towards the market. At the next village, a crowd saw them and people gathered. Look at that foolish man. His child is young, healthy, and sprightly. He's getting on a little bit in years. Why, you know, this is foolish. So I thought, okay, what to do? So he got his son off the horse, climbed up on the horse, lifted his son up on the horse, so they were both proceeding on the horse to market. They came to the next village. A crowd gathered and said, bring the RSPCA, the Royal Society for Protection of Animals. Look what's going on here. That old horse, poor horse, and two people are riding on it. Ring the RSPCA, get them out here right away. So the gentleman, our hero, hearing this, he was intelligent. He had discrimination. You can think, how many combinations are there here? There's a fourth combination. There's a fourth combination. Put his child down. He got off. And both of them were walking along with the horse. Now I've solved it. They came to the next village. Gramya Kata, village talk. Look at that man. global warming, energy crisis. He's got this healthy horse, which is a source of renewable energy, and is just not using it. What a waste of energy. We'll get on to the Energy Commission and report this man for wasting the Earth's natural resources. Our hero was not to be daunted. He had an idea. So he and his son, they got some sticks, bound up the horse to those sticks, and both of them were carrying the horse to market. At the next village, they had to go over a bridge, over a stream or a small river. And yet again, would you believe, I know this surprises you, but another crowd had gathered, and they were laughing. Look at that man, healthy horse. Why are they not using? And they're carrying it to market when it can walk by itself. And by this time, the man was a little frustrated. So he glared at these people over the side of the bridge. And as he was glaring at them, the horse struggled free from its bonds, fell over the side of the bridge, and was lost in the river. Moral of the story, don't take people's criticism too seriously. There'll always be someone to criticize us in this world. That is the nature of this literature. They call them, we have the expression, the tabloid press. The small newspapers, full of criticism. Regrettably, this phenomenon has also spread to some parts of ISKCON, or areas connected with our society, where we have ongoing internet debates on such deep issues as what clothes should we wear, devotional clothes or kami clothes. Here, of course, it's relevant that the sannyasi is not defined in terms of his dress or whether he carries a stick, but in terms of his qualities. Of course, sometimes these externals are important because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, for example, for a reason, because people respect sannyasis and would see the dress. I mean, they would recognize a sannyasi. Ah, here he is. He's in orange. No, he hasn't got a tail. Ah, there's his danda. I pay obeisances. So there's some reason for that. But still the important thing is quality, discrimination. Even sometimes learning is criticized. Our Bhaktivedanta College may be criticized. And there are some dangers in discrimination, developing discrimination. So another animal is cited, the hawk. Why the hawk? Because the hawk has got keen vision. He's flying very high in the sky, and he can see a small carcass from a great height. That means his vision is better than our human vision. He can really see something small on the ground. So he's flying very high. He thinks he's an academic because he lives in Oxford. And his real business is, his discrimination is, oh yes, this wine is very good. I think it's 1837, fine year for wine. One of the best years that I've had. So there is culture, there is discrimination, but that discrimination is about wine and women. So he's at a very lofty level, but so there is danger. Just one point here. Just because something's dangerous doesn't mean it's bad. Here the verse mentions fear of material existence, afraid of material. But with regard to being a little thoughtful, because something's dangerous doesn't mean it's bad. Why? Life is dangerous. I think it was, who was it who said this? He was very reassuring. It's one non-devotee can't remember his name, but he said, don't worry, no one gets out of here alive. No one gets out of here alive. Think about it. You can imagine a situation, no one's going to get out of here alive. But actually, that's the situation we're in. Learning is dangerous. That's sometimes the criticism. Life is dangerous. Learning is dangerous. Love is dangerous. What was that song of the late 60s? If I never would have loved, I never would have cried. I just read one poem by someone called John Stallworthy called The Almond Tree. Very interesting poem, The Almond Tree. And it was about how he was driving towards the hospital to actually, for his wife was giving birth, their first child. It's in Oxford, interestingly. He describes going over Magdalen Bridge with the Magdalen Tower, those of you who know Oxford. And it describes how he was feeling very joyful and how the traffic lights were peppermint green. Again, interesting the relationship between our emotions and our perception. Because he was happy, everything looked bright and the traffic lights were peppermint green. But when he got to the hospital, the doctor told him that his child had Down syndrome, what they used to call a Mongol in those days. So even that, so in this world, that is the product of love. That's the purpose of married life, but disappointing. Life is dangerous, love is dangerous, and learning is dangerous, but we are Satchidananda. We cannot give those up. Sat means life. Chit means learning, knowledge, and Ananda means love. Three things: to live, to love, and to learn. They're really essentially part of the soul. You cannot get rid of those. They're ontological truths. Being a person is dangerous. Therefore, the Mayavadis don't like being a person. Prabhupada mentions Shunyavad. They don't like this being a person. It's dangerous to be a person. But here it's mentioned face to face. That means Krishna is a person. This, when it says face to face, it means literally a face. Face. Krishna has a face. He's a person. So what's this relationship between our emotions, if you like, and our cognition? Discernment has a lot to do with the state of the heart. Therefore, Krishna says, Tesham sutaya yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dabdami buddhi yogam. He says, bhajatam priti, to those who worship me with love, priti, tadami buddhi, I give them that intelligence, that discrimination, that discernment. I've already mentioned how that story of that poem, how our emotional state affects how we see the world, what we understand. So what is the state of mind of a sannyasi? It's an interesting one. Sometimes sannyasi is criticized. It is feared sometimes by our married ladies. Is it a sign of being cold? No. The sannyasi is a citizen of the world. His affection broadens. Should have probably mentioned somewhere, I'm not quite sure where, but anyone who's got a public office or holds a leadership position can never be narrow-minded. He or she can never favor their own family, for example. Sometimes if we have some position of influence, a family member may say, can you do a little favor for me? It's called nepotism. And if you do read some of the papers, and hopefully not the tabloids, you'll see that very often leaders are caught out in doing something for a friend or for a family member. There's been some recent cases, I think, intervening in judicial cases and so on. So a Mahatma is broad-minded. You can't just see in terms of I, me and mine, my community. Similarly, a learned man does not hate the world, nor is he fearful of the world. This is interesting. Fearful of material existence, does that mean we're fearful of the world? There's a difference. Why? Because the Paramahansa can see that the spirit is present here also. Whereas those who are impersonalists negate the world, thinking they're negating matter. But they're not negating matter, they're negating matter and spirit. Therefore the Gita says, Yavat sanjate kinchit sattvam stavara jangamam shetra shetriga samyogat tadvidi bharatashiva. O chief of the Bharatas, know that whatever you see in existence, both the moving and the non-moving, is only a combination of the field of activities and the knower of the field. In other words, matter and spirit. Therefore, a Paramahansa starts to see how Krishna... Well, a Paramahansa can see Krishna face to face, but the process is to start seeing how is Krishna present in this world also. Another interesting point here is that with the description of the four stages within sannyas, is that there must also be a society. Spiritual life has form, so there must also be a society. We were discussing the other day how even in the spiritual realm, there are some divisions there. Otherwise, how could Madhu Mangala steal Krishna's laddu and then say, don't worry, I will give you my blessings, that Radharani will be pleased with you. That means he's a Brahmin, because they give blessings. So that variety is also in the spiritual realm. So there needs to be organization also here in this world. It's not that there's just devotion, it's mere sentiment. One may be soft-hearted, but one should not be soft in the head. There needs to be knowledge also. There needs to be some degree of perhaps professionalism in our devotional service. To see how intricate this system is for organizing society and how much attention is placed on having a good society, for example. So therefore both must be there. There must be the devotion, but there must also be an organized society. And Srila Prabhupada mentions three things: devotion, culture, and education in the beginning of the fourth chapter. And how those who are leaders, administrative leaders, specifically he's mentioning here, must spread Krishna consciousness through those three means, through culture, education, and devotion. They must both be there. Therefore, even though the material existence is fearful, if we're actually situated on that level of love of Krishna, we're not actually in material existence. Therefore, we needn't be fearful of engaging with the material energy. To summarize, Srila Prabhupada said, we must have the heart of a Bengali mother and the courage of an English officer. Hare Krishna, any questions or points?
How do they? How do they? Well, they eat like everyone else. But how do they justify their eating? How do they? Well, that's the difficulty. How do you really justify any material activities? And you're right, absolutely. There is a problem with that. Because actually the philosophy is, by actually stopping activities, I will become free from the reaction. But you can't stop activities, because svakama jam, we're bound by our activities. Therefore, the challenge with the impersonalist philosophy is that it is not practicable. One cannot put it into practice. And therefore, you will find that there is a tendency within the Advaitic traditions to resort to social work, humanitarian work. You've got to do something, such as eating. So this idea of stopping all activity is not possible. You're right. Does that answer your question? You can't really apply it. You've got to. So why are you eating? Why are we opening hospital? Why do anything? What is the purpose? What is it that they don't do? Well, generally they follow very strict rules regarding sense enjoyment, as here, yama, niyama, and so on. They do. They control the senses. But the point is, even if one has, you know, manages to control the senses by force, still one has to eat. Plus, the fact is that one cannot really control the senses in that manner. Therefore, they will always fall down at some stage. Why? Because the heart is not satisfied. And that's the point here, really. The sannyasi is satisfied. As a Pavirajakacharya, he actually travels the world as a citizen. He's a global citizen. He has affection for people and wants them to be Krishna conscious. By his own experience, he knows that Krishna consciousness brings happiness and the lack of Krishna consciousness brings unhappiness. So therefore, out of affection, he travels the world. That's real. It's meaningful, you see. There is a fullness to the life. There is meaning. There is some joy, anand. There is happiness. There is learning. And there is life. Therefore, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says, Thakur says, if you want to preach, you must have life. Be interested in life. We cannot deny life. Life is good. Embodied life is a problem. Life is good. Well, the sannyasi probably will avoid. In a sense, they're implicated to a degree. Yeah, they eat berries or whatever, or they go begging. Yeah, but the point is, you can't escape that implication in the world because one has to do something. Svakama and other things. We have our nature, and it's not possible to go against that nature. That's a good point. I don't know. We should do some research at the college. We should find some Advaitins and ask them why they eat. Let's find out. Yeah. What does Maya mean? Literally, what does Maya mean? One meaning is illusion. You're right, I mean, not without Krishna, illusion. Another meaning? Huh? That which is not, that's true, that's related to illusion. There's another meaning for Maya. Huh? Mercy or energy. So we often use it in terms of the material energy, Maya. Maya, yeah, right. We have Maya personified. Or the material energy is personified as Kali, Durga, Parvati. She is the embodiment of material energy, and Shiva is the supreme male. She's Mother Nature, Parvati. So Maya means also means energy. It also means illusion. So the material energy. So when we say we should be fearful of Maya, what do we mean? Do we mean fearful of the material energy or fearful of illusion? There are different meanings. So in a sense, the devotee may be fearful and should be fearful of material, of Maya, of illusion, in that sense, illusion. We need to have that healthy respect for the material energy, but a devotee is ultimately not fearful. The Paramahansa is not fearful because he sees Krishna's hand everywhere. One devotee, I think it was Harisari, told me Srila Prabhupada always looked very comfortable in his body. Just an interesting statement I heard. Why? This world is also Krishna's world. This house is Krishna's house. You know, we're at home, in a sense. So we need to actually see, again, discrimination. What do we mean by Maya? We should be fearful of material existence, illusion. But should we be afraid of the material energy or interacting with the material energy? It's okay, Arjuna, go and sit down on your chariot. There's too many soldiers out there. Have you done your rounds, Arjuna? Go and chant your rounds. Now I've told you the Bhagavad Gita. No, I told him, you go and fight. He wanted to retire from the material energy. So what are we fearful of? And is fear a good emotion? Interesting discussion. We don't have time, I fear. Right? Mother Jayabhadra, and then one other question, we must finish. He's thrown into the material energy and covered. Yeah. Yeah. He's quite a big competitor, Krishna. He's kind of worthy of our fear. And when you break the law also, you're right, when you break the law, immediately you're fearful. A criminal is always fearful. He can pretend, he can have audacity and say, I don't care. But the fact is, as soon as you break the law, you know someone can come get you and take you to prison. So similarly, when we transgress the laws of material nature, we're immediately fearful. That's true. So fear will be there. So a devotee overcomes fear. Very important to do that and to look at our... I think we need to look at how we're fearful in many ways. Fear can be a very binding emotion and not conducive to spiritual life in many ways. So what to fear and what not to fear is also discernment, discrimination. One should be very careful to know what to fear and what not to fear. Let's just take one other question because we have time for prasadam. Oh, and I was going to take... Good. Okay, very quick. I'll come back to them very quickly. Hmm? Yeah, that's true. Some people apparently are unable to live without food. Your question... Yeah, it's dangerous. So he was fearful also. Yeah, and there are stories of devotees who actually are fearful of interacting with the world. But I think the usual response from the Supreme Lord and his associates is, yeah, Lord Brahma, You get on with it, I'll protect you. Srila Prabhupada actually mentions in one place, very interestingly, that the material energy is so powerful that the pure devotee will sometimes forget his relationship with Krishna. Interesting, isn't it? So, but the Lord always intervenes to save his devotee. So that... Both. To save. He saves his devotee. He'll intervene. He'll remember, my devotee is somehow, by the influence of material energy, forgotten. So he'll be there. So therefore, that trust in the Supreme Lord needs to be there. Not that we... There is a tendency for us in the beginning to hide from the material energy. It's quite right that in certain stages of life, we have a kind of retreat, as it were, from the material energy, and that we focus on our spiritual life. But if we're going to be also preachers, following the example of the Parivrajaka Acharya, that means we have to have some interaction with the world. But then we have to have some discernment. What is good out there? And this is very important in our preaching. Can we see the good in those out there? It is easy to say they're all karmis and mayavadis and demons. But actually Srila Prabhupada says 90% are innocent. And there's a problem with that, because what are we getting back to? Bodily designation, I'm a Vaishnav, he's a not a Vaishnav. Is it a bodily designation? Of course, we have some esteem in our tradition. That must be there. Some loyalty to our tradition, but is it just a bodily designation, you see? 90% of people are innocent. If we are Krishna conscious and we present Krishna consciousness properly, they will not be able to resist. We should give up blaming them because of their lack of faith for our preaching not working. The challenge is with us, that we are not able to make Krishna consciousness relevant to them, because Krishna consciousness has got to come down from its lofty theoretical platform down to this world. And if we're not able to actually successfully engage in Krishna consciousness in this world, what use of going back to the spiritual realm? We will create dissension and politics there as well. Therefore, we have to stay here and be successful here. And we have to have that vision first, that we're able to see the good and give real solutions to people's problems. We have to also discern who is a demon. There are demons there. Some who are really angry at God. But most people, if we present solutions... But can we present solutions to their problems? Yes, we should be able to. All their problems? Well, we've got a little bit of a way to go. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada says we... And this obsession I was talking about, actually I didn't mention it, I was going to mention it, something with this obsession with being right, philosophically right. It's important to be philosophically astute and to have discernment, but actually that's not everything, to be right. Philosophically right and correct. It isn't so easy, the process of knowledge. Why? Because we're living in this world and we have to apply it. And we'll always come across situations which aren't mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita or the Bhagavatam. I've got an argument with my god brother. Now, where's this mentioned? Oh, yes, it says in chapter 10, verse 6, that he's wrong and I'm right. No! I have to use my own knowledge in that situation. Does that make sense? Yeah, we have to assimilate this knowledge. The whole process is to become wise, to get discrimination so we can apply it in our own context, set a good example for others, so that when they come and they meet us, they think, I want to be like that person. Very important. Therefore, the sannyasi is held up as an emblem for the rest of society. not just of his dress, but because he has that integrity of character, that Krishna consciousness. Ideal person. Someone we want to follow. Someone we want to become like. Very, very important role models. Hare Krishna, time for breakfast. We can eat happily because we have a good reason to eat. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.